Welcome to the Minivade Gang podcast for Friday, September 25th, 2009. This is Steve Borsch, and this is going to be a little bit of an unusual podcast this week because I'm the gang. Graham Fickens was out at Demo Fall 2009 this week. Tim is off on client adventures. Phil and I this morning were at the social media breakfast up at the Brookdale Library, which was a great event. But what you're going to hear now are a handful of interviews that Graham and I did attending the Rainmakers Conference, put on by Rainsource Capital right here in the Twin Cities. If you don't know about this firm, they're a multi-state network of funds, of rain funds, that work with angel investors who are interested in supporting growing companies. So if you're a growing company or you know someone who has an interest in some funding, this is the type of organization that very early on is supportive of not just making money. Obviously, that's their intent, but there's other motivations behind it, like growing a region, growing a state, building a critical mass right there in their own particular backyard. So North Dakota was represented, South Dakota, Minnesota. There's also a group in from Idaho, and so it's quite a network. I was surprised. This is the first one that I've gone to, and we start off interview with Brian Johnson, who's one of the principals at Rainsource Capital. So they'll explain a little bit about the event, and then the other other audio interviews you'll hear is one with Robert Metcalf, who's the founder and CEO of FlySpy. A group called Entractive, with Justin Bartek, who's one of the co-founders. Both of them are interesting, and I'll have some stuff in the show notes about this. A fellow named Joel Ackerman with the River Group, who has a very interesting integrated and aggregated health product. It's kind of a senior's health portal or touchscreen into a bunch of different kinds of aggregated services. Big deal as the population ages. And then the last one might be of specific interest if you're a power user or somebody interested in development, a company called Declarex that has a very interesting flex-based drag-and-drop rapid application development type platform. And so you'll hear that, and then we'll be back next week with more gang members to bring you interesting perspectives on Minnesota innovation in internet and web technology.
Okay, this is Graham at the Rainmakers Conference in lovely Bloomington, Minnesota, the sixth annual, sponsored by our friends at Rainsource Capital, headquartered in St. Paul. And I'm standing here with Brian Johnson, one of the principals of the firm. How are you, Brian?
I'm good. Glad to have you here.
Yeah, it's great to be here. It's a pretty good turnout.
Yeah, this is actually the largest turnout we've ever had.
Is that right?
We were a little worried a week ago because it seemed this year a lot of people waited to the last minute before they signed up.
Isn't that the way it goes, especially in the economy we've had here?
Right, that's right. I think that's a big part of it. Yeah,
yeah, the conference business has been tough for everyone, I'm sure, in the last year, but things are definitely picking up now, I think. And so tell me a bit about how many states are represented here, would you say?
We've got rain funds in 23. We have 23 rain funds in six states, and so we've got representatives from all of the rain funds here at the meeting. So we've got all six states where we're in operation. Represented.
And the Angel Association that you're partnering with is has members all over the country.
Yes, that's the national. It's the Angel Capital Association, and that's the national, one of the national organizations for angel funds and angel investors.
Yeah. And the head of that is here, and he's from Ohio, right?
Right. Yeah. John Houston is the chairman of the Angel Capital Association this year, and John is also a angel investor himself, and is actually a member of three angel funds, all based in Ohio.
Yeah, interesting. So we've got people probably from more than six states here. Then,
yes, we do.
Count. Yeah, yeah. And have you got any from down south, Texas, Oklahoma at all this year?
I'm not sure where the sort of the outliers are from right now, but you'd have to check with one of our other staff members.
Yeah, well, good turnout, and it's a lot of great educational sessions for angel investors on due diligence and so forth yesterday, and you're going to do an M&A session this afternoon, kind of on the climate in the M&A world these days, right?
M&A and IPO. And,
yeah, okay,
there's
yeah.
a lot of things that have changed over the last 10 years and in the last year in both of those categories. So.
And I hear the IPO market's heating up. Did somebody say there's eight about to go or that have gone out here in the last couple of days? Or?
Well, I think there's three that I heard that have gone into registration in the mm-hmm. last week.
Mm-hmm.
So that is, I think, good news. I think the negative that I see is that I don't think you're ever going to see a small cap IPO anymore. They're all going to be raising $75 to $150 million mm-hmm. in their IPO, and that's mm-hmm. not the typical companies that used to get funding at an earlier stage. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, for instance, I know Intel, when they went public, they raised $8 million. Now, that was in 1971, but, you know, that sort of a deal would not happen today.
No. Yeah. So. Yeah. But, well, let's switch over to talk a bit about the current climate in angel investing. What's the view from Rainsource Capital in here in the upper Midwest and I guess the western states?
Well, you know, we have the funds that we have are committed funds. In other words, the members have committed a certain dollar amount, each of them, to their fund. And so they've got a fund that has a pool of money that's there to invest. And so they're still investing. Now, it's not to say that it hasn't changed what they're more interested in today than, say, a year ago even. You know, I think today they're looking at, rightly so, companies that are going to get to positive cash flow faster and companies that are going to generate revenues faster. You know, and so it's not as much the seed stage companies anymore, even for angels, I think. I think the companies that need seed stage funding are going to have to get that from their family, friends, and relatives.
The rich uncle, yeah, for sure. Well, we had some great companies presenting this morning, four companies, some of whom are well into revenue and even profitability. Do you want to say anything about any of those firms?
Well, they're quite different. We had one hardware company, well, a combination of hardware and software, which is in the storage business called Prana. We had a very interesting robot company called Recon Robotics that really sells to the police stations, SWAT teams, and to the military.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a robot that allows the police or the military to see inside a building or on a roof or wherever and steer and drive the robot to see what's there without exposing a human being to danger.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so it's really grown rapidly. They have now sold their 600th robot, and that's really up from just starting sales about 2.5 years ago. So they're really doing well.
Yeah.
And then we had another software company that's in the Mac world or in the Apple world called Intractive, and they're out of
Grand Forks.
Yeah, yes. Right, Grand Forks, North Dakota. And so, you know, and then Innova Solar was the company that's out of Boise, Idaho, and they've developed actually a very interesting solar technology to actually put the solar panels on the column of a streetlight.
Yeah, instead of the big ugly thing that
right.
normally hangs at the top. They've engineered a really cool system.
So really very different companies, but it gives you some idea of the flavor and the variety you get for angel investors to look at and invest in.
Yeah, it was exciting. Well, I'm looking forward to the rest of the morning here and the afternoon session my colleague Steve is going to hang around for. It's great seeing you, Brian, and all the best of luck.
Thanks, Graham. Appreciate it.
Hi, this is Steve Borsch with Minovate, and I'm here standing talking to Robert Metcalf of FlySpy, and we are at the Rainsource Capital,
Rainmakers Conference,
which is comprised of angel investors from several states around us, including Idaho, of all places, or somebody from Idaho. But I'm wondering, what are you doing here, and why do you have a booth, or why do you have a tabletop?
We were funded by a number of angels that are part of the Rainsource Capital Network. And as a company that's been funded, we get invited to this conference every year to come talk with our investors, see what other angels are doing,
okay,
and show them the product and what advances we've made.
And so you've got a good net connection, I hope?
We have a fairly good network connection,
yeah.
Yes.
Because you can't show that running on your laptop?
No, no. We have a good network connection for the demos, so.
Good, good. And when do you think you'll have an opportunity to talk to people? Are they kind of milling about now? Or
We've been talking to people almost since the minute we walked in the door. People find us or we find them. There's just a lot of interest among angel investors in especially the firms that they've invested in, but also what's going on in the market, who's doing what ideas we're seeing,
yep,
where other money is going, kind of the what the economy's like out there.
Well, the fellow that was the chairman of the Angel Capital organization was talking about how B2C investment plays are more challenging than B2B plays. And since FlySpy is maybe kind of sort of more, you're about maybe halfway each way. Would you agree? Because it's business people predominantly that the airlines cater to, and everyone's looking to save money. And so do you characterize FlySpy as a B2B play, a B2C play, both?
No, I would say that all travel sites are predominantly B2C, but your target audience, in our case, we're going after 70% business travelers, 30% leisure travelers. So it is kind of a B2B play,
yeah,
although
yeah,
the exposure is in a B2C environment.
Okay. So do you think you'll have more challenges, less challenges, in terms of receptivity on the part of angel investors?
There are never less challenges. It's always more.
Yeah. All right. Well, hey, thanks for talking to us.
Thanks, Steve.
Okay, this is Graham again at the Rainmakers Conference in the Twin Cities. And we're in a break right now, and I'm talking with the folks from Intractive in Grand Forks, North Dakota, who were one of the presenting companies this morning. And I'm with Justin Bartek. How you doing?
Good.
CTO, right?
Correct.
And co-founder?
Yes.
Yeah, well, tell us about what's the latest with Intractive, what you've been introducing here lately.
Sure. In July, we launched our 2.0 version of Element CRM. It was picked up by Apple as a staff pick, which was really nice for us. We followed that up with an iPhone release here just a week and a half ago.
Yep.
It's out on the App Store. Check it out. We're getting a lot of good reviews from customers, Apple, and everyone in general.
Good, good. And did I hear you're going off to some Apple Consultants event or something coming up here in the fall?
Yeah, correct. We'll be out in San Francisco the first week of October pitching to the Apple Consultants Network. And then following up in October, we'll actually be pitching at some of the Apple stores, starting with the one here in Bloomington at the Mall of America.
Oh, and that'll be later on in October sometime, huh?
Yes.
What are you doing, like just a one-day deal there?
We're not really sure. Okay. Some sort of presentation to Mac users and Mac corporations within the area.
Okay, cool. And your cohort and co-founder, Dale Jensen, is out in New York now, did he tell me?
Correct. He's out there talking to some partners about integrations with Element CRM.
Yeah, well, that's great. Well, good talk to you, Justin. And I'm going to switch over here to the CFO, Will Kussler.
Is it? You got it.
How you doing, Will?
Good.
You did a great job up on stage this morning telling the story. Give us your story of how you came to be involved with the company.
I got involved with Intractive during their first fundraising round. I was part of the group that kind of arranged that while I was finishing up my MBA, and turned that into a full-time job, and here we are out raising funds and trying to get the word out.
Sounds like you're coming along on your second round of funding here, and you said you were how far along on that?
We're about have two-thirds done. Okay. Really, it's going to allow us to leapfrog that sales forward. I mean, that's the focus right now. We have a tremendous product out. It really has resonated well in the Mac community, and those sales and marketing dollars will really help launch it upward and onward.
And this round is about $750K, did you say?
Yep, $750K, and we've raised about
$525. Yep. Yeah, well, great. And how many employees do we have now at the company?
We have 5 on staff right now. We use some contractors for some tech work. We use some contractors for some PR work and here, there, and the other, but always looking to add sales talent.
I hear you're recruiting a director of sales.
We're really looking for someone with experience in selling to that 10 to 20 or larger market, someone that can really convey value and has an understanding of the Mac market.
Good, good. I'll spread the word and get some candidates pointed your way. So what's next for beyond, I suppose you can't tell us what you're going to be introducing in the future here, but beyond the October time frame, anything else that I chatted with Justin about that you want to mention?
We have some cool things in the pipeline. The product will continue to come along and some cool integrations coming out. One very popular thing right now with our customer base, and it's out to all customers, is our Elements Mail application that allows you to touch-free archive all of your email, that there's no more entering of anything. It automatically will pick it up, and that works with any email application. You can continue to use Apple Mail or Entourage or whatever you like, and it does it all automatically running in the background.
Great. So email archiving for the small business.
Email archiving for the small business.
Well, great. Well, best of luck to you guys, and I should say hi also here to Jenny Satak.
Satak. Close.
Satak.
Yep.
Satak. And what do you do, Jenny?
I do a lot of sales with the company and some marketing as well.
Beautiful. And you've been with them for?
I've been with them just a little bit over a year now.
Oh, well, you're an old pro then,
I am.
Yeah, well, great. Well, we're glad to have you guys here in the Twin Cities, and all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, see you later. Say hi to Dale.
Okay, this is Steve Borsch with Minovate, and I'm here talking to Joel Ackerman and Shelley Grace from River Systems, and they have a healthcare solution called HomeStream, which is for helping seniors to stay at home as long as possible. How you doing?
Doing really well today. Thank you.
Good. How about you, Shelley?
Doing great. Thanks.
So what can you tell me about the solution, if you were to give your 30-second elevator pitch?
Well, what we're doing is we're integrating the technologies and services necessary for people to stay at home stay in their own home as long as possible as they age, to do that safely and to enjoy life and to lower their costs and stay connected with friends and family and with clinicians, as well as get access to all the services they need and the world of entertainment, lots of things. So a variety of tools to make it safe, enjoyable, and less costly to age in place.
And so what we're looking at here is your touchscreen interface. You happen to have this on an HP touchscreen with essentially big buttons to call and calendar and do messages and all of that. So basically you're integrating services together.
Yep. Yes, we're essentially an integration company. So we're taking technologies that exist and are proven, and we're making them consumable and affordable, and so they work together. So that, for example, a video call with a family or nurse gets logged to mom's calendar, so that over time you can do things like also track her social connectivity to beneficially monitor if there's a drop, which could be an early indication of a problem emerging.
Want to bring Dave into
and you know, what I didn't think about yesterday when we were actually looking at your daughter over in London over Skype, I assume, was the fact that there seems to be a real growing groundswell of physicians who are working with physician's assistants on the ground, as an example, and really driving forward with essentially doing diagnostics of patients virtually.
Yeah, the telecare capabilities, it's emerging, and it's starting to be reimbursed by insurers and by Medicare and Medicaid as a viable method for taking care of patients. And
it leverages even the broadband connection?
In some cases, yeah.
Really? Okay.
Medicaid is in some cases paying for that.
Okay.
And that's changing, so it's getting better all the time. And that model is going to be necessary because there's a whole lot of us aging baby boomers, and there's not going to be enough doctors and nurses and caregivers to be able to support us given the current methods of, you know, meeting somebody in the clinic office.
Exactly.
Just can't do that.
Yeah.
Well, so we have to find better ways.
Well, it's just such a challenge for seniors to get out and go do things. You were showing me yesterday some of the devices that are...
Yes, one of the nice capabilities of the system is that we can integrate with a number of devices that are available on the market today. The devices that you're looking at here are biometric devices and then motion detector type devices. And these devices are Wi-Fi enabled. So you have a scale, a blood pressure monitor, you can have a glucometer. And if mom or grandma or grandpa or dad get on the scale, weigh themselves, that data is transmitted wirelessly into the system where it's captured. And the same with any of these other devices, the motion sensors.
Yep.
And
okay.
What this allows a caregiver to do is to be able to look at data across a number of days or weeks and to be able to understand if the patterns are the same or if the patterns have changed. Because one of the challenges with healthcare today is not only the distance, but the frequency at which you can intervene or you can monitor patients. And generally speaking, it's monthly, sometimes weekly, whereas this can allow almost daily monitoring.
Right.
So at what our providers, that our provider partners are very interested in, is that earlier intervention, to be able to predict that something is happening and to intervene before an adverse event happens.
Well, and I was looking, in fact, I talked to my wife last night about this because I had mentioned my father-in-law is 96, mm-hmm. and she and her six sisters are sort of all active in his care, and just the calendar function alone about being able to manage, you know, so not only can the seniors see their calendar, but everybody else can participate, and oh yeah, that's right, Dad's got his dentist appointment at 9 o'clock. Who's going to take him?
Right.
And put in Barb will take him, and you know that type of thing. Actually, what I was thinking about too is I've competed in weight loss competitions with buddies of mine elsewhere, and I could then, in fact, monitor. Of course, they could probably have one of their kids get on and the scale and go, hey, you know, how'd you lose 100 pounds overnight?
Well, you know? It's also important to recognize that we have to have the controls and the authentications authorizations for who can see the data.
That's right.
And
that's
make
right.
sure that that's appropriate, too.
That's right.
But I think one of the real beauties and the strengths of the system is the idea of integration, because as we talked about, there are different technologies on the marketplace, whether it's healthcare, social connectivity, entertainment, but not only bringing them together, but integrating them. So you used your 96-year-old father-in-law as an example. Your wife's sister has a call with him. Well, when your wife looks at his calendar, it's actually logged on the calendar that he had a call with her sister automatically.
Okay.
If he went...
So they could take turns even...
Exactly.
Contacting him.
And
yeah.
if he had a call with a healthcare provider, that gets logged on the calendar so the family can actually see not only what's going to happen, but what has happened.
Okay.
And ask him questions. Oh, I see you had a call with Barb. How did that go? What did you guys talk about? You know, that type of thing. So it really is this ability to integrate the different activities and capture them, even though the technologies are disparate.
Yep. Well, one of the things that, for our audience, just to, I guess, to close with, two things. One is people always want to know, you know, how you or what you use to develop the web mm-hmm. application. Mm-hmm. They're always interested in tools, things like that. But then the second one is something we touched on yesterday, which is related to standards. You know, mm-hmm. are there emerging standards in, you know, Wi-Fi device capability that you can actually tap into? And you talked a little bit about Wi-Fi versus Bluetooth, and it sounds like they're the standards really are emerging, or
there's a number of competing standards.
Okay.
So it's
all
like
right.
you know,
like everything else.
Blu-ray versus
right.
So the good news is that there's some work being done on standards. The bad news is that it's not all standardized yet.
Okay.
The way we're architecting, though, we can embrace a set of technologies, whether it's Bluetooth or Wi-Fi. It doesn't matter to us, and we can integrate it in with the rest of the system. And all of our applications designed software as a service, so there's very little, if anything, that needs to go on the user's actual home system.
Okay.
So we can, what that means is that, as a, for example, the video call capability, as we find a better engine for driving video calls, we can swap that out under the surface, and the user doesn't even see that there was a change, except they see that their calls are better.
Right.
So we don't have to reprogram the people or their systems in order to do that.
The other advantage we have with the SaaS or software as a service model is that it allows us to have a variety of providers. Some may be national, but some may be local or regional. For healthcare providers, obviously they operate in a certain area. So we can access the patient base in that area with a certain set of applications just for those patients.
Oh, good point.
And so therefore the model itself drives the ability to have a wide variety of applications that can be specifically targeted geographically, demographically, in a variety of ways, and are very easy to change, to add as time goes on. And so, again, it's something that you could not do with any other type of model, but it's great with this. And we are hardware agnostic, so basically a basic laptop with a webcam that has a reasonable processing power and an internet connection is all you need.
Yeah, yeah.
So it is not hardware dependent. We like the touchscreen capability, but it's not a requirement. So again, it makes it much more accessible and consumable.
Well, and with the acceleration in device types, because HP just showed their, what's it called, a DreamPad or something that just came out.
Right,
and
yeah.
There's the rumored Apple tablet and now the rumored Microsoft tablet.
Mm-hmm.
And Nokia's got product. I mean, you know, clearly the device types, and they're going to drop in price and all of that. You know, there can be something maybe somebody can take around and put on a table. I mean, so being agnostic is a good thing.
Right. And likewise, you know, for input approaches, you know, whether it's touch or voice or whatever, or visual with camera, you know, we can exploit the different input capabilities of the different devices as they come out.
Right. Yeah. Well, great. Well, thanks for talking to us.
Thank you.
So, Steve Borsch, and I'm here at the Declarex booth talking with
Jim Schwartz
and
Mike Bogan.
So tell me about what you guys are showing and what your product is.
Okay, we're showing a web-based application that is used to build web-based applications, business applications that are highly data-intensive. That's kind of our focus on data-centric business applications to be built on the web and hosted on the web. So a customer of ours can build an application, he can deploy it into the cloud, and he can sign up his users. He can also build a software as a service business using our products.
And the one thing that when you gave me a demo yesterday that really excited me was it's a Flex-based interface that automatically writes the code, and more importantly, the business analyst or a power user is the one who can actually create and develop the applications, right?
That's correct. That's kind of our focus out of the gate here, is to go after that sophisticated business analyst who's probably really sharp with Excel, understands data and how it's organized and how data is related. And then we can provide him a visual tool to create a nice user interface, actually a very rich interactive user interface because of the underlying Flex technology.
So one of the things after I was, you know, thinking about this last night and how you can put things together, we talked a little bit about embedding, and you can do an iframe to actually access the app on your desktop. But do you see this primarily as a web application dashboard creator? I mean, is that one of the outcomes, maybe one of the primary ones? Or what do you think are the primary type of applications that you'll start to see built on this first?
Well, we hadn't thought a lot about, you know, having it used as building portal parts of dashboards or used in mashups, although you could. There's no reason you couldn't, since it's really just another web application. But we see more like what we've used it for. I mean, Mike and I have been involved in this European logistics business, so we built a product for that. That was really the first product built with Declarex. We've also built an insurance claims processing application for a large healthcare insurance company for one of their subsidiaries. One of the other clients that our partners are working on is an analytic tool for a large data streaming operation going on here in the Twin Cities. So, you know, so really I think the spectrum is all over the place. Anything you can do. I built an asset allocation application for my own use. You could have, you know, the soccer clubs or the investment clubs, all the way up to real hardcore high data volume business applications. So, I mean, that's kind of our forte, is really into data. information management. That's our language, our proprietary language that sits on relational database technology is called information query language as opposed to structured query language, which is what the database provider provides. So it's the ability to extract information out of vast amounts of information because through our data modeling capability, you're describing really in an intelligent way how data is related to each other. And given that information about the data model that we have, we build metadata that allows our engine to make really smart, performant choices about how you see the data. So when you do a drill down on a table or on a report, that the engine actually knows how to roll that data up for you. You don't have to write the code to do all the roll-ups and all the pivoting and all of that sort of thing. So,
right. Well, that was one of the things, too, that we kind of talked about and touched on yesterday was the acceleration in cloud computing and the fact that in a lot of cases, the Salesforce.com model with AppExchange, there are obviously third parties that are developing a lot of apps to plug into your Salesforce infrastructure, but the ability to customize and create your own, for example, is still a real challenge. I mean, it's still a real developer-centric model to tap into that API.
Definitely is that. Yeah, I've been doing this now for quite a few years, building web application, and it's still hard. And, you're a long ways from the end user. You don't really get, the detailed requirements. Nobody really does that very well. We feel that even if a business user is not, really data savvy, he could sit down with somebody who is. And when they get up, they have a working application.
Right,
We have in our tool. So our time to market value prop is very good. And then the long-term maintenance is where this really shines over, web application. And even to make small content changes takes at least a half a day. It's minutes here. Functional changes take weeks and months. It's probably hours and maybe days with the product like this.
Right. Well, great. Well, good luck with it.
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks.
Thank you.